few months ago, I watched a webinar co-hosted by Nick Mehta, the CEO of Gainsight. In the webinar, Nick mentioned a book by Frank Slootman titled Amp It Up. Nick said it was a great book, but it had this chapter that basically stated customer success was a fad. So I got the book and I read it. Definitely a great read for tech professionals, but I do think Frank got it wrong in his analysis on why companies do not need a customer success function. So I wrote a blog responding to that chapter, and TSI launched it into the public domain to spark a discussion on this topic. And the timing is important because our research shows that technology companies are absolutely debating the value of the CS function. Do we really need CS? I'm Thomas Law, the Executive Director of the Technology and Services Industry Association. Welcome to Tectonic, the podcast where we explore what makes technology business models successful in today's world. And today we are bringing back a Tectonic veteran, Jim Roth, President of Customer Success at Salesforce, and we're going to debate the value of customer success. So let's get this insight engine humming. Jim, welcome. Just, you know, for the audience, again, I know you've been here before, but can you just overview your responsibilities at Salesforce?
Yeah, of course, Thomas. It's great to be asked back. I'm really happy to be here again. My role at Salesforce is the President of Customer Success. We'll get into more about what that means, but it's really responsible for what this audience might think of as customer support, customer training, and the customer success functions that we think of as success managers and success architects.
Perfect. And, you know, I invited you back to discuss this topic of the value of customer success because I know that you and I actually don't agree on all aspects of this question, which I think is fantastic. And I want to put down some starting positions. So in this blog I wrote, I basically described why customer success has been established as a distinct, separate function, primarily to focus on customer adoption. And Salesforce is really one of the fathers of customer success in the industry. And because, again, nobody was really focused on adoption. Yet, in your tenure at Salesforce, you have actually combined customer success with traditional technical support, as you just mentioned. So tell me about your rationale in making that move, which is a big move.
Yeah, we've combined those two and customer training. So the way we think about it is we think about what are all the services our customers need throughout the full life cycle? And we contrast those with the services customers need from time to time. And so you get this kind of bimodal split. The services customers need from time to time are project-based services with a start and an end date. That could be for an implementation. It could be because you acquired a company, you're divesting of something, you're buying a net new product, any of those types of things. And those are what we think of as professional services, start and end date, project-based. And then everything else, we believe, are customer success services. That's what we call it. That's the umbrella we put over it. And if we were a company that had a physical product, we would, you know, include things like field service in there as well. And so when we think about those capabilities, our goal is to integrate them into one experience. We talk all the time ourselves about how we never want our customers to feel our org chart. That's a really key point. You never want your customers to feel your org chart. And I would say that any company on this planet of any size that is delivering service has this problem. It's very hard to not have this problem in some shape or form, but that is our aspiration to kind of break that down. So when you talk about combining these things, we still have people that their full-time job is technical support engineer. And we still have people who their job is a customer success manager. And we still have people whose job is to deliver customer training. So we have those roles, but we have integrated them in one experience. And a couple of things we've done, I'd say, that are interesting are when we started this journey, customer success and customer support each had their own portal, all with good intention.
But they had,
and so then you get to customers and you're saying, well, which portal do I go to? And even Google is confused when you have multiple portals, doesn't know where to send you. So we said, okay,
one
of the first things we do is let's go get to one website. That makes more sense, right? They had a lot of similarities, but let's bring them together. We also had two roles that were customer facing and were kind of, I'm your single point of contact. In customer support, it was called a TAM, a technical account manager. And in customer success, it was called a success manager. And so one of the things we've done over the last year is we've kind of brought those roles together into one role that we call customer success manager. So we're really integrating the experience, trying to have a veneer for the customer that says, hey, we have one experience. You have bought one service. We think about it as a super service. Support, success, and training together, one experience. Now, behind the scenes, we certainly have specialization. We have support engineers that specialize in products. We have architects that specialize in products. But we have one orchestrated experience, one veneer, so customers don't feel our org chart.
So let me react to all that, because you put a lot out there. And I know you're dialed into our content, and you know that we are actually a believer in more services convergence across the traditional stovepipes, right? For all the reasons you articulated, which is, you know, we create these very stovepiped experiences for our customers. And the example of, you know, two different portals is a classic. And so we actually believe that those traditional organizational stovepipes do have to collapse. So I think there are a lot of benefits to what you're saying here, right? To create a more, you know, seamless experience for the customer. But the tension in the system, and I'll pick on the one point you made there about you had a CSM and a technical account manager. And I would assert that, you know, historically, the technical account manager is very focused on, system down or technical problem, I got to help you. And a CSM, again, the reason they were put in play in the industry is, hey, I'm not reacting to urgent, you know, technical issues. I'm really here to make sure you're adopting, getting value, et cetera. So put a little bit more color on the fact that if you bring those two roles together, how do you not lose the focus on adoption and get weighted toward the technical support?
Yeah. We think about really two customer journeys that we're in the business of. One, you mentioned them both, by the way. One is the resolution journey, which is there's a problem and we need to fix it. And the way we handle that, certainly that's kind of a reactive situation. Customer comes to us with an issue. Right. Sometimes, by the way, we would see it through telemetry and we would alert them that there was an issue.
Sure.
So there's a resolution journey that has to kick off. And we believe there's value in the relationship of that named resource, whether you call it a TAM or a CSM, to be part of that process, to provide comfort for the customer, a phone number they can call if they need to. Reality is, there's a whole team of people that are specializing on driving that resolution, incident management, incident command, support engineers, all of that.
Technical talent to go
solve it, right? Could be into engineering if it's a bug or something, all those things. And that named resource is really orchestrating the experience, facilitating the experience, maybe providing some updates, being a conduit, but not really driving the resolution. And so that hasn't been a challenge for us today. But where this does come up more is in the other journey that we focus on, which we think of as the education journey. Yeah. When I say education, I mean it in the broadest sense, not just we want to train you on something or get you certified, but we think of education as really the journey you're on to drive adoption. Right. The way I drive adoption is I educate you on what our product can do, what you're not doing with the product. And I can educate you on how to go use that with the product so you can get more value out of your existing investment. And so in that case, the CSM, this singular role, is again playing an orchestration role where they're working with the customer, understanding they have the relationship, they understand the problem. And then what they can do is they can marshal all of the resources from behind the scenes, whether it's a specific architect, a trainer, maybe you need a class to take, some video content, whatever it is. And that's kind of how they orchestrate the experience. So we haven't really seen a conflict. I'll tell you an analogy that we used was in the late 1860s, Carl Benz, who really kind of invented the first automobile, he was building every automobile as a one-off. So he had these amazing craftsmen that could kind of fabricate every single part of the vehicle. And they were these beautiful feats of engineering, but they were all, as you could imagine, they were all kind of unique and bespoke, right? And then our friend Henry Ford came along in the early 1900s and came up with this concept of the moving assembly line and industrialized car manufacturing, and famously had the line, well, you can get it in any color you want as long as it's black, and has kind of standardized that model. So we kind of think about that as our model of how do we drive specialization and industrialize this experience where you can have a named resource or a digital experience through the web playing this orchestration role. But then behind the scenes, you're marshaling all the resources with deep expertise to kind of bring the experience to bear, whether the customer at that moment in time is looking for a resolution or some education to get more value out of their investment.
Yep. So I want to just be crystal clear. I understand, again, just using the role of CSM as it is defined now, right, in the combined organization. If I play this back, they are, in a sense, a quarterback. So whether the customer is on, you know, a resolution lifecycle, they're helping with technical issues or the education, they play that quarterback role, and then they're marshaling the more specialized resources to help on either one of those journeys. Is that right?
Right. And they're doing that in concert with some digital kind of support as well. So it's not just all people. Yeah. There's some digital aspects to it using telemetry. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, as I listen to that, again, I hear nothing but upside there in terms of the fact that, again, you are taking out complexity and you're breaking down those stovepipes that would have existed between traditional technical support and CS. But I'm curious, you know, since you've made this move, what other types of benefits are you seeing? So less complexity for the customer, anything else that this is helping drive?
Yeah, I know another interesting one is historically, our customer success team fielded a lot of how-to questions. And what we've seen is because we've really consolidated that kind of reactive question answering capability, and we now have a mix where in our technical support team, about half of our questions are kind of technical break fix, something's not working, and half of them are how-to questions.
Yeah.
And so what that's done is given us a lot of scale in answering how-to questions. And what it's also allowed us to do is apply kind of the best practices of support and knowledge-centered support and getting content for those issues, kind of applying all of that to the how-to questions, where historically that was really kind of more focused on the break-fix questions. And so in a lot of ways, customer support operations are pretty good at responding, reactive, scaling things. And that hasn't historically been the strength of customer success. Success has been more the relationship and the proactive. Yeah. And so in our experience, we think about the world in a 2x2 matrix, which on the x-axis is the continuum from self-service to assisted service. And the y-axis is the continuum from reactive to proactive. And so this model really helps us cover those quadrants of that matrix in a much better way.
Yeah. And that's super interesting because I agree. I mean, I think one of the challenges that CS has in the industry right now is its processes are less mature. It is less industrial than support. Support, you've been in support, you know, a long time. I mean, we've had a lot of years to basically grind on that business and make sure that it take out costs, make sure it's scalable, you know, and we know all those tricks. And I think taking some of that DNA and getting it over to CS is important at this point in time. But the other thing is, as listening to you there, talk a little bit about, since you also have education, are you getting more leverage from education capabilities as it relates to this how-to? So again, breaking down stovepipes instead of support people who might not be so great at the how-to questions, but now you're, you know, ES is all part of your organization. Talk a little bit about that relationship between ES and support motions and adoption or education motions.
Yeah, there's a couple of big ones that come to mind. So I mentioned earlier the example of customer success and customer support had their own portals. Well, guess what? The customer training education team had their own portals.
Of course.
It's a big one at Salesforce. It's this amazing capability called Trailhead.
Right, right. I've seen those.
And so we are now in the process of bringing those sites together as well, our help site combined with our success site and Trailhead together, because we view having one site, again, focused on two journeys, education and resolution, is really powerful. And you think about it, on this site Trailhead, we have a lot of content on how-to questions, but we also have knowledge articles from our support portal that have a lot of the same content. We now have combined our content teams to have one type of content, and that's helping us a lot for efficiencies. Because sometimes, and you've seen this with other companies, where the knowledge article will say, hey, Thomas, for your question, you just need to do steps 1 through 5. The training content say, well, no, you could actually do it with steps 1 through 4. Like, it could be different and inconsistent. So we're finding kind of leverage in more consistent content and even leveraging better education content, higher production, shorter form video content, even applied into the support experience. So that's one. The other thing I would say is historically in our case, and I've seen this other places too, the education services team is a little bit separate. Mm-hmm. And they kind of had their own go-to-market. And customers would always say, hey, training's really, really important, but the adoption of training was not great. Now, interestingly, the focus and the strength of customer success is adoption, but typically we've pointed customer success resources at the adoption of products. Yep. So one of the things we've done that's really interesting is said, yes, customer success managers, we want you to drive adoption of products, but we also want you to drive the adoption of training. And that's been kind of a light bulb moment because they're like, oh, well, I can do that. And in our plans, we've included the education capability. So it's not a separate sales cycle. It's included in the plan. And so now we're measuring, are they adopting training? Are they, you know, on our Trailhead site? Are they attending our virtual live instructor classes? Are they getting certified and passing exams? And then in account reviews, that's one of the things we talk about. Hey, you know, we noticed you aren't really on a learning journey with us. Mm-hmm. And a learning journey could be training and certification, but we also extend learning to coming to our events. We have great events like Dreamforce. That is really a learning event as well. Customers come to that event to be inspired about our products, our roadmap, and most importantly, talk to other customers like them about what they are doing with our products. Mm-hmm. And so we really think this notion of learning needs to be front and center in the experience, and having it integrated into these plans where it's all included and has the motions like customer success manager to pull it through is really delivering a lot of value.
Well, as I listen to that in terms of the role of education in a more converged model like you have, right? So you know this as well as I do, but if you look at most education service organizations within tech companies, there's a couple common parameters here. Number one, they're always woefully underfunded. they're just scrapping for resources. To your point, they're sort of off to the side. So they're creating training materials and courses and stuff, but no one else is advocating for them, you know, in terms of, like you were just saying, there's adoption, that it's really sticking. And these poor ES organizations, because they call us all the time on this, and like, we're looking for benchmark data to prove that when customers get training, that there's better adoption, better renewal, better expansion. And it's like, yeah, that correlation is super strong. But that problem is not that that data doesn't exist. The data exists. The problem is companies don't do anything with it, right? They don't internalize that routing. What you just described is saying, look, we got to get the learning journey as part of everybody's thought process and get education capabilities front and center, that we really are landing those capabilities with customers, because it's the proverbial win-win. The customer's going to be more successful and they're going to be more loyal to you. It's a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, we think about customer health and we define it as, to be healthy, you have to have a strong implementation, right? So it's up and running and very stable and high performing. And you have to be adopting both the licenses you purchase, the features of those products, and any of the consumption units that are in those products. We want that. The great thing about education and training customers more on your products, it actually helps both of those. We see that when customers are more trained, they have healthier implementations and better adoption. So it's kind of this force multiplier to drive customer health. And so you're right. It's been on the side. It hasn't been pulled through. We think it's a big unlock by really putting it front and center in the experience.
You know, I think about all the education service people that we have within the TSI community. If any of them are listening to this podcast, I'd be going back to my senior leadership and advocating for the model you have in place and saying, look, I want CSMs and everybody else really, you know, kind of carrying the water for us and making sure that we're getting adopted, because it is the right model. And again, you don't often see enough advocacy for the, you know, the education service capabilities.
One other thing we're seeing, yeah, that's kind of interesting, I mentioned this, that now 50% of our volume into our support team is how-to questions. And so there's a really interesting feedback loop there from those how-to questions back to the education team as well. Because of the proximity in the organization, it's kind of unlocked that feedback loop as well. I mean, it's an obvious feedback loop that anybody could go after, mm-hmm, but organizationally, sometimes when things are off on the side, you don't kind of do that as well. And so that's been another big benefit as well.
Well, you know, because one of the questions I wanted to ask you again, as you start to converge the organizations, the concern you have is that you lose line of sight to adoption. And again, the point I made in this blog was the fact customer success got created for a reason, because tech companies didn't have anybody focused on ongoing adoption, right? They had focus on the implementation, on the technical support, initial education, but not ongoing adoption. And what you're putting on the table is that you have this ongoing feedback loop that everybody is aware of. So it sounds like there's a set of KPIs there you're looking at to being able to say to customers, hey, you're not on a learning journey with us. So, you know, the things that you're looking at to determine if they're on a learning journey or not, what do you use to, you know, which is really assessing adoption?
It is. I mean, you made the right point, which is you have to have the right KPIs. And the way we think about it is my whole team, all of the functions, the people that are customer success managers and architects, the people delivering training and the people delivering support, all have these KPIs. We call it the customer success score. In fact, I gave a little bit of a sneak peek into that at the Convergence, ironically, conference last year in Orlando. But the way we think about that today is the customer success score has three component scores in it. One is a technical health score, which is really looking at telemetry from the back end to understand, well, what are we actually seeing in your instance? Are we seeing high page load times? Are we seeing row lock errors? Are we seeing anything in the infrastructure? What are the things that we see in your implementation? Have you written too many lines of custom code? All of those things that we can look at and say, okay, we need to go work on your implementation. We then have an adoption score, which is looking at things like, well, what's your license utilization? What features within certain products are you using and not using? And if there are certain features that are really valuable that you're not using and other customers that look like you are using, then we should go put you on a journey to go adopt that feature. So feature level adoption becomes key. And then we also look, as more of our business moves to more consumption-based products, are you consuming the consumption units? Are you You know, with our marketing cloud product, are you consuming the messages that get sent out? Are you consuming gross merchandise value in our commerce products? We look at all of those adoption characteristics. And then on the expertise score, which is the one we call about knowledge, this is the one about the learning journey. And so we certainly look at, are you on our training resources, on our websites and our classes? Are you getting certified? But again, are you coming to our events? And events could be Dreamforce, but even are you coming in and doing briefings with us? Because we view that as a form of education and knowledge. I can't tell you the number of times when customers don't know about certain features that have been in the product for many releases, much less the latest release. And it's a lot. We have a lot of products, a lot of releases. It's hard to keep up with. And so this matching mechanism of, you know, what features am I using versus what features are out there is really important. So those are the scores we use. And then in our tooling, in our CRM system, we put those scores in front of not just the CSMs, but in front of the support team, in front of the people doing training. So everybody has that context. And we're now working on the next evolution, which is now let's also go put those same scores in front of our sales team, in front of our professional services team, in front of our partners. And we're actually putting them in front of our customers as well. Because one of the big unlocks from this is customers don't view the vendor as solely accountable for customer success. They recognize that they have skin in the game too. And so if you go to a customer and show them these scores and you say, you know what, your implementation is not that great, or you're not on a learning journey with us, or there's some features here that, you know, are really valuable, not that hard to implement, and you're not adopting, they light up. They love that. That is a great conversation to have with a customer. What we've learned is that just makes you show up as being informed with context and here to help. And customers love it when you show up that way.
Yeah. And there's two really important things that you said there from my perspective, listening to that. And number one is creating a common set of metrics that describe customer health that everybody in the company is looking at. So there's no doubt that the customer success organizations create customer health scores. They almost all do that, right? And you know, there's frameworks to do that and you can stand them up. But they're often looked at within the CSM perspective, like, oh, here's this customer health score that I'm managing to. Right. And what you just said is no. We got to have, first of all, you know, a broad set of metrics that are looking at technical health, you know, learning health, et cetera. And we got to get agreement across the company that this is what's defining customer health. And everybody's got to have visibility to that. Right. And, and so product teams, professional services, not just the CSM. So I think that
that's
not
easy, by the way, but it is really important. You know, there's some debates and food fights around what the metrics should be and all these things. But it's a big unlock, because imagine when you do that, all of a sudden you show up as one company, not as the sales team versus the customer success team versus professional services or whoever. You're actually delivering one integrated experience. And you could do interesting things. We haven't done this yet. We're thinking about it. You know, should part of sales compensation be these metrics as well? So you can actually, after you have them, you can
You're talking crazy talk now. This is crazy talk. You're hearing crazy sound. No, I agree with you. I mean, I think, you know, that is absolutely the correct thought, right? Is you get everybody in the company incented to drive how, as a company, as an executive team, as a leadership team, you've agreed, this is what defines customer health. And if we all agree that these are the metrics we want to move, then we should be incented toward that. Totally agree.
There's one other thing I've learned through this too, because customers, when I share this with them, we sometimes have a conversation around, hey, how would I think about having a customer success score? And you're right, in companies with CS, a lot of companies have it. But if you don't have CS, if you're just a traditional product company, this is kind of still a new concept and they don't really have these things. So one of the things I've learned that's important for the listeners is when you have this conversation around customer success or customer health, everybody kind of measures it. They might use different words, but you really have to be critical with what you're using and what you're measuring. Oftentimes when I ask customers, well, how do you measure customer success? I'll hear things like a revenue metric, a churn metric, some sort of, you know, bookings measure or whatever. And you have to be really careful, because those are, in fact, measures of your own success, not your customer success. So one of the heuristics that we use internally is we say this: if we're considering a new signal in these scores, here's the divide we look at, which is if we would actually sit down and talk with a customer about it, then it's a candidate to be in the customer success score. However, if it's only a signal that we would talk with our CFO about, then it's probably a measure of Salesforce success. And so we only put things in the health score that we would actually sit down and talk to a customer about, because those, in fact, would be customer success measures, not our own success. Now, our own success is still important, but we believe if we drive customer health, that leads to our own success, and you can't kind of conflate the two.
Yeah, which is the second observation I wanted to make about, you know, what you're talking about here is you're talking about how customers want this feedback, right? If you're going to sit down and talk to them about health metrics that matter, that they're going to really relish that experience. I think that's so true. And it reminds me, there was a presentation that a TSI member did literally like 6 years ago. It was a software company. And they basically had said that, you know, they would implement their software. They would document what particular business objectives the customer had with the software. And then they created a dashboard that basically tracked the features the customer needed to adopt to get the value they said they wanted to get. And they would play that dashboard to the customer. And it was like a Christmas tree. And they'd say, look, you're green here, but you're red over here. And so whether you needed salespeople or support people to adopt these features, doesn't matter. They were saying, hey, you're red. You're never going to get the business value unless people start leveraging the, and again, this is whatever, 5-7 years ago. And I saw that and I thought that is where the game has got to go. We've got to be playing that to customers. And you're right. They're going to see a lot of business value there, but you're not just a technology vendor. You are a strategic partner to their business success. That's what they're looking for.
That's right. And when you get everybody on the same sheet of music with the same measure, including the customer and your sales team and your service team and your partners, then it's also a way to hold each other accountable, right? We can hold customers accountable. They can hold us accountable. It's not just one way. Sales can hold us accountable. We can hold sales accountable. So it's really a beautiful thing from an accountability perspective. And we aren't there yet, but we're seeing kind of the early evidence that we're really onto something.
You know, I've been in tech for over 30 years now. You know, just being candid, I think it's a little bit of embarrassing that we as an industry haven't gotten better at this game. But I think, you know, we're going to get there. There's a lot of pressure in the system for us to up our game and make sure we are really delivering consistently the business value, not just slinging the technology. And so I think we're going to be a lot better at this. I'm super optimistic and that we're going to make huge strides here. But on this is sort of the game changes. One of the things I'm curious about is how the relationship between your service resources, right? Your technical people, your CSMs, et cetera. How's the relationship evolving with sales over time? Because you put an interesting thought on the table about saying, hey, what if sales was incented around customer health? That's a really interesting thought. But what are some of the other ways you're seeing that handshake or that relationship evolve?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the evolution, you know, really progress from kind of there was a pretty big wall there and it was sales throwing things over the wall to service teams. And what's really happened, that wall is coming down in a big way. And I would say one of the big drivers of that is incentives, right? And we aren't there yet on this health measure, but even in the last year, we've aligned our financial incentives much more closely and that has created pull. I would say the success organization historically felt like they were kind of having to claw their way into these conversations. And as soon as we changed the incentives, all of a sudden, the sales teams were there with their arms out saying, hey, come on in, let's have this conversation together. Let's go drive health.
Was that changing incentives for salespeople in which way to get them to care more about CS? I mean,
It was layering in more of the churn and attrition types of metrics for sales. That's really what it was. And it's been there. Wasn't that it wasn't there, but they were dialed up and a little bit more complete, and it kind of was an unlock. The other thing I would say, and this is, there's no rocket science in this one, Miguel Milano, our new chief revenue officer, and I, we spend a lot of time together. And so we are arm in arm on this conversation that we're here to drive ARR up over time, not just incremental ARR. And that's been a really big unlock as well. And so I think some of it's just change management behavior. I don't know if it's any harder than that. We do believe, though, that this health thing will be helpful over time because the health is a leading indicator where churn metrics are lagging indicators. And so we want to get ahead of this even more. We think that drives even better behavior.
Well, what you just described there about sitting down with your CRO, right? And that the CRO is focused on obviously not just new revenue growth or new bookings for the quarter, but their overall the health of the revenue streams. I mean, two things on that. Number one, that's the reason we think more and more companies are going to have a CRO. Because you have to have somebody in the chair who is thinking about all of the channels of revenue, right? Whether it's going through partners, whether it's direct, whether it's the net new, whether it's the, you know, how are we doing on renewal and expansion? And they're constantly looking at all the options on how to drive that revenue. They're getting the most cost-effective revenue growth they can. But they think in terms of data, they think holistically. And it's not somebody who's like, oh, I used to be a sales executive and now I have a fancy title called CRO. And what I do is I go chase, you know, net new bookings every quarter. That's not a CRO. So I think that, you know, what you're describing is really, that's the kind of relationship you want between your role and the CRO, right? And that's really super important.
It's led to things that are that you've been talking about for a while that we haven't done. Like we just kicked off a pilot to do lead pass from parts of my delivery team over to sales.
Yeah. That's a huge opportunity for sure.
And so it's also leading to opportunities that way to go build more pipeline, which again is you know, not a new concept, but you kind of have to have a lot of these pieces in line to really make that work.
Yeah, you do. You have to build a process. You got to get the eyes on it. And so again, cost-effective revenue growth is, again, one of these things is going to be in fashion and not going to go away anytime soon, right?
Absolutely.
So, you know, I haven't hit on AI, but it's hard not to hit on AI. You know, when we're having any of these conversations today, and I'm just curious because I know you guys are, as a company, heavily focused on building AI capabilities, you know, within your technologies. But what are you seeing in your chair in terms of how AI is changing support and customer success workflows?
Yeah, I mean, a couple things come to mind there. You know, one of the use cases that we see as being the most compelling in success and support is summarization. Summarization is really powerful. You are a support engineer and you get called in to help on a case. Maybe there's a shift change. Maybe it's an escalation. You need to know what's going on in this case. Yep. Summarization is a beautiful tool for that. Yep. Similarly, in a customer success role, you're going to visit with an account tomorrow and you have to go do all your prep work of like what's going on in this account. Holistically, summarization is a great tool. So we really think summarization is a really compelling use case. Another use case we like a lot is, I call it the drafting use case, which could be, hey, you get an email and you're responding, let the AI write the first draft. It's a chat response, let the AI write the first draft. That applies to, you know, customer success or customer support. And even things like knowledge articles, write the first draft of the knowledge article, which support engineers typically don't love writing knowledge articles, but it's really important to capture. So drafting is kind of another really important use case. And there's some others. Transcription is one. We now have full transcripts of all of our voice calls. That's been really powerful. Translations, one that, you know, people don't think about as much as I'd like in the industry, but translation is a really powerful use case and can really solve an age-old problem of, you know, how do I offer support in multiple languages? That's right, a hard problem to solve without, you know, standing up teams, you know, subscale teams to handle kind of all these languages. And so those are some of the examples of things we're really seeing a lot of work with. Another great example, this was a fun story around education that we're seeing, is one of the challenges that we have is, you know, we have a lot of releases, a lot of products. So it's hard to keep our certification exam questions up to date. Mm-hmm. And so we're now using AI to create those questions. We have the psychometricians who are the experts at writing the exam questions review that. So there's still a human in the loop there. But that's allowed us to do two things. Number one, we can create exams and keep them current way faster, like 70% faster. But number two, one of the problems you have with certification questions is people like to cheat on them. Not a lot of people, but it does happen. Yeah. And so you have to be careful of fraud. We've been able to 10x the number of questions we have in our battery of exam questions. And so the fraud rates have dropped significantly as well, which is a big win. So that's a cool education example. And then I'd say the big one, that the technology is still maturing. The one that will get all the attention to take cost out is, you know, some people call them co-pilots, digital workers, these customer-facing kind of bots. They're really just better bots, if you wanted to really break it down. Better bots, bots backed by better technology. And that's a big self-service unlock. So in our world, I mentioned earlier that 50% of our support tickets are how-to volume. That 50% is a lot of cost. And if we could go have better bots, generative AI, responsive search, where you ask a question and then the bot can ask really intelligent clarifying questions. And we can, I don't like the word deflect because it's very self-serving. So if we can drive more success in self-service with these better bots, that's the big financial unlock. Yeah. And that technology is getting close. What we have seen and with our customers is the unlock for that is you really have to have your data house in order to do that, because in self-service, there isn't a human in the loop. Yeah. But to do that at scale, your data, and when I say data, I mean your structured data and your unstructured data, content really have to be organized. And that is a challenge for all of us. I think for a lot of us, we've known for years, our data isn't as good as it needs to be, but this is going to be the forcing function because there's a lot of money at the end of that rainbow. If you can get your data house in order and go unlock that use case.
Yeah, no, I'm seeing this on a weekly basis talking to member companies. I mean, I think everybody has this realization, what you just said, but I'll put two end game use cases, which I think are going to be completely game-changing for tech companies. One is related to what your example in the Copilot, and you can see it already, and you guys are chipping on it. It is the ability to bring in insights on your products. And we were talking about earlier, education services has content. Professional services has content, you know, unstructured presentations. Yeah. You have your product has. You're going to be able to bring all of that into one engine, and your customers are going to be able to ask the smartest engine possible, how do I use this product, you know, blah, blah. And it is going to be fed by not a stovepipe of just support content, or it is going to be fed by the best and brightest thinking of everybody at Salesforce. That is going to completely change the way customers.
That's a big one.
That's a big one. Here's the other one that I'm seeing, Jim, is the internal version of that. And you talked about this just a couple minutes ago. Like, your employees have to prepare for a customer meeting. What's going on with this customer? Whatever. Basically, an employee is going to bring up same thing, like a Copilot, and they're going to say, okay, I'm meeting with customer A. What are their top business challenges right now? They're just going to prompt, right? What products are they using? What are they not using? They're just going to basically ask it intelligent questions. And it is going to draw from every system you have, financial system, your CRM, external financial, you know, reporting on that.
Press releases.
And it's going to basically make them the smartest person in the world on that customer. And they're not going to have to spend hours and hours and hours doing homework.
Yeah, instantly. Yeah, that's
instantly.
Right. Instantly.
Yeah. And so it just those two use cases right there, A, is going to take out a lot of time and cost and energy in a tech business model. And I don't want to lose sight of this. It's going to create a much better experience for the customer.
Totally.
You know, if those tools are in place, your employees can serve the customer better. They can serve themselves on their own better. It's a good end game.
It's a win for the customer and a win for the company.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Jim, I'm watching the clock here. I got one more question for you here. And that is, there's no doubt executive teams, a lot of them in the industry are debating how can they afford customer success activities, right? I can't give up technical support and I can't give up professional services, but do I really need this CS thing? So what guidance would you give to your peers in the industry that it might be in a battle right now? You know, how do you defend the value of customer success?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things that come to mind there, Thomas. One is, if you are really thinking about growing your subscription revenue base, you need to think about, well, how am I going to grow that? Some of growing it is putting more water in the bathtub, but of course, some of it is keeping the water from going out the bottom of the drain.
Sure.
And so you need to think about, what's the model I want to go do that? Do I want to have one person, an account executive, maybe they sit in sales, that's responsible for new water and the drain? Or am I going to split that work? So it's kind of, what's the work and how are you going to divide it? But your question is really around, how do I pay for it? And so there's an important question here is, do you want this cost to be cost of goods sold, or do you want it to be operating expense? And typically, it's easier to fund it internally if it's cost of goods sold, because the definition of cost of goods sold is there's revenue against it. So in a monetized world, which is the path that we have gone down, it's been much easier to justify the resources. Now, we still want to manage and be efficient with our cost of goods sold because it's still cost and it's still dollars. But that was one of the big benefits. When we combined support and training and customer success, one of the decisions we had to make was, well, support is typically in the industry monetized.
Sure.
Training is typically monetized and customer success is not monetized. So two of the three were monetized. And so we had to make a decision. Are we going to monetize this super service, the combination of all those, or are we going to do it more included or for free? And so it was a pretty quick decision, because we were not going to unmonetize support and training, because those are kind of accepted norms. And so one of the things that has helped us is, if we had just gone out, I believe, and said, hey, we're going to monetize customer success, and you have to buy a customer success package and then a separate support package and then a separate training package, customers would have been like, what is all this stuff? I want to buy one. I'm here to buy your product, not to buy all these services. Don't nickel and dime me. By bringing them together, and by the way, we got some efficiencies of scale that helped us drive better pricing and things like that. That was really the model. And so now, we look at this business like a P&L, and so we measure our scaling and our growth against it. But that's been a much easier conversation than when I talk to some of my colleagues in the industry who still are on an OPEX model, which is very hard to get dollars, because OPEX is really what's becoming more and more and more scarce.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, as you know, we've talked about these profitability levers for SaaS companies, and one of them is you got to monetize the services where the customer is getting value if you're delivering that service, and you got to be good at that. What you just said there is the fact that by bringing the organizations together, you can rationalize the service offering in front of the customer so they understand how it all fits together. And part of it is there's going to be some value add customer success motions there that you can charge for because the customer gets its value from that. And so
right.
I completely agree. If you're not chipping on how to monetize at least a piece of it, it's very hard to scale it and fund it by just giving it all away. I do fear for some companies where they don't know how to cross that Rubicon, right? And so the reaction is going to be, I just got to take the cost out. And then to your point, you get to this drain problem because your salespeople, yeah. I'm sorry, there's a reason customer success is in play. There's a reason it's in play at Salesforce is because your sales account executives, you don't want them worrying about ongoing adoption and spending a ton of cycles on that. You want them driving net new revenue opportunities. And so what's going to suffer if you don't have CS in play? What's going to suffer? The adoption, the renewal, the expansion. That's right. What's going to suffer, no doubt.
And if your company's growing and your strategy is to keep cutting and cutting and cutting CS,
yeah.
You're going to have this divide that's going to create a lot of problems down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other bitter irony right now, Jim, as you know, in the current economic environment, getting revenue from the existing customers in terms of just making sure the renewals are there and the expansion has never been more important to tech companies.
Agree.
Never been more important.
Totally
so
agree.
If you don't have a CS, you know, capability in play. Well, hey, I really appreciate the time. This has been great discussion. I love the fact you're willing to come back in and, you know, you're doing some, I think, some really exciting things at Salesforce. I think it's really important to have you on because I know a lot of the industry looks to Salesforce as a thought leader on what does, you know, mean to have a profitable SaaS company? What's it mean to have scalable CS? So I think sharing, you know, your thoughts about what the levers are there, super important. And I always like to end here with a question of the day. So for the audience here, you know, this debate about the value of customer success is not going away. Are you prepared to win that debate? Cheers, everybody.